I'm a winter person. Ever since my early 20s, when I learned how to downhill ski and therefore the amazing sensation of flight and freedom that comes with rushing down a hill on a pair of waxed boards, I have been most alive outdoors in the cold, crisp air. I take a strange kind of pride in making sure I'm warm enough and going out even when it's below zero. And I feel the exact opposite about summer heat. When temperatures get above 85 or so, I become lethargic and really whiny. And I want to escape into a cooler place. I enjoyed living in the Northeast, and I like it here where it doesn't get ridiculously hot, except for once in a while, and where I can do just fine bundling up for the winter. Even winters like this one has been, where there has been little sun, and I need to use my happy light to stay, well, happy. I have always been better at cold than heat. So when I went to Arizona last summer for an action to support No More Deaths volunteers that were facing federal charges for various activities they had done to help migrants crossing the desert in the intense heat to survive, I was hugely surprised to find myself liking it there. I liked the hugeness of the landscape, the ability to see so very far, the rugged shapes of the mountains sticking up randomly out of the flat desert floor, the stark beauty of the cactuses and the yuccas and all those other prickly things that I had never seen before. All those things that were alive only because they put every ounce of every resource they have into being alive. I've been thinking about that since this trip, about how life finds a way, even in the harshness of a hot, dry place like that, and about how in some places where resources are more readily available, a wide variety of living things can grow much more readily, and some of them can develop features they don't need to survive, but that help them thrive and outcompete. Ferns come to mind with their lush fronds that make lots and lots of sugar, but also lose lots of water when they breathe. And sugar maples with their sweet sap that runs down to the roots every spring. Blueberries with their delicious, soft fruit. And apples. I wonder how much water goes into making one apple. But in the desert, every plant is adapted to conserving its water. A lot of us know the cacti store water deep inside them and develop thick outer layers to decrease transpiration, water loss during respiration. But did you know that their spines are really leaves that have been adapted over hundreds of centuries to protect the plant in response to that lack of resources and the amount of resources it would take to recover if something took a bite? And the spines, they've lost their chlorophyll in that process, and so the green cactus stem is what contains the cells that make the food. There's this one cactus called an octotillo that does have leaves, but it loses them seasonally, just like plants here. But when the leaves grow in the spring, it's not in response to increasing day length like it is here. They will only grow if it rains. If it doesn't rain, the plant just waits to grow leaves until it does. And it's these straggly little, well, they're tall, but they're skinny like this, like a bunch of sticks sticking up with these big points on them. Anyway, all of that is to say that the desert is a very strange place to me, and nobody was more surprised when I decided, after spending those few days there in the summer, that I wanted to go back. I did not feel at home there, and there have been hard things happening in my life lately, as in many of yours, and I really do like the feeling of being at home. So why the desert? To be completely honest, I haven't really been feeling at home in much of any place. As I've been relearning how to be on my own, I used to say that I was at home wherever my family was, since we've moved quite a bit over the years, but now my family is scattered, and I don't feel at home, really at home, you know, in that way that you can just sink in and relax and go, ah, I'm home. So I went back to the desert. It was not as hot, thankfully, just comfortable enough to be out hiking in shorts and a t-shirt. The sky was a shade of blue I don't think I have ever seen in my life. And the sun was glorious. The landscape was just as wide and rugged as I remembered, and I could see forever, and the plants were just as prickly. And here's the funny thing. Even though this place did not feel at all like home, I somehow found myself actually breathing in and sinking in and even relaxing a little bit. Of course, it was partly because I had no work or parenting responsibilities while I was there, but it was also, I think, partly because I gave myself the chance in this new and unforgiving environment that fascinated me to just be in it. The place was so harsh, and this idea that anything alive was using all its resources to be alive, that resonates so deeply with me right now. The place was so unfamiliar that my curiosity was aroused. I spent a whole day at the Sonoran Desert Museum trying to learn the names of all the plants. And it struck me that this was a place I had never shared with my ex-partner, so I didn't have the burden of having memories sparked. And I had no expectation of it feeling like home. And that was a relief. Eventually, toward the end of the week, I found myself thinking about a teaching that I have been working on. The teaching is that the universe holds us, always. That the universe is still holding me, even when I can't seem to find a sense of home. See, my faith is based on relationship. And when my primary relationship fell apart, there was sadness and anger, but there was also betrayal. And that betrayal caused me to lose my faith. Because I see God, or the holy, or the spirit of life and love, as something that arises within us and between us when we're in right relationship with each other. When we're working together, when we're not pulling against the ties that bind us. And if someone with whom I'm in deep relationship can leave me, then where is God in that? So along with my sense of home, I lost my faith. This is pretty hard, especially in my line of work. I've been working my way back to trusting the universe again. To believing that teaching, that it did not drop me, even though a human did. Perhaps for now, it can be enough to simply marvel at the mystery of a heart so broken, of how a heart so broken can go on beating, as if it were made precisely for this. As if it trusts that its own persistent pulse is the rhythm of a blessing we cannot begin to fathom, but will save us nonetheless. When we're faced with loss, there are so many ways in which we're shaken. We grieve, of course. We feel sadness. We feel anger. We miss the person or thing that is no longer an active part of our life. When the loss is a leaving, we might also feel a betrayal, an upwelling of insecurity in ourselves, a loss of self-trust, or a loss of trust in others, or even a loss of faith. When this loss is a death, along with all of those other things, we might also wrestle with our own mortality. These are big and very scary things. And they can bring loss of faith or loss in trust in whatever it is we have believed is holding us. Regardless of the kind of loss, what we most often need is some kind of assurance, some kind of reminder that we have not been dropped, that we are not alone, that our broken heart can go on beating. Throughout the healing work I have been doing the last couple of years, I've been surrounded by friends and chosen family, people who have talked with me, brought me food, taken me out, stepped up into roles I've had to step back from, challenged me to examine my own self. Sound familiar? I'm blessed to have a caring community, and this has helped me remember that indeed the universe has not dropped me. This is what we do here. I try to remind you. You remind each other. And when something tragic happens, you hold each other. And I come back to a community that is still full of love. I began to hear my heart beating again in the desert, even though I was far away from anything I had ever known as home. How that happened is not entirely clear to me. I might have to go back. But I'm grateful. And now I have come home, back to Madison and my changed family, and to you, for which I'm also grateful. What do you need to know that you are home? I hope this community is part of that answer for you, as it is for me. And I hope you'll tell me about it the next time we can talk together. Blessed be.